start this. For some reason, we're not streaming. Hang on.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
All right. We are on the air. But with a little issue.
Facebook didn't make it either. No, it's not catching that either. I'm not sure why. I'm looking into it, though. Operators are standing by.
I had problems with my headset. Mike, can you hear me? Plugged in directly to the computer. So I called in on the guest call-in line. Oh, and speaking of guests, he just popped in also.
Let's go down.
I suppose I'm everyone can hear me and everything's okay on this.
Yeah.
I don't know what the problem was with my headset, but my headset just wasn't working. But we can still
you're good.
Visit and, you know, get everything as it were. So we have a guest tonight, Director of Member Relations at the Wine Institute in California. I believe he is. Ian Blue. And we'll let you let him tell you his story and all that. He's in the green room right now enjoying all of our food and everything in there. So we're going to have to pull him out of that and bring him onto the show. So welcome to the show, Ian.
Thank you, Ron. It's great to be here. I'm Ian Blue. I work at Wine Institute. You know, we're the trade group for California wine, and we seek to educate the public about California's wine industry. We have a website, discovercaliforniawines.com. It's a great resource for California wines, wineries, and wine regions to learn a lot more. But great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure, believe me. The California Wine Institute, I've been there before, and I've used it before. I live in California, and you guys have been around for a while, and I've used your resources on more than one occasion over the years. So it's a great place, and people, you know, I reiterate, check out the website. It's very, very informative. So you're on tonight to talk about that and White Wine Day, which was just passed on August the 4th. But California white wines and other things. But first, I want you to tell me about yourself, your story up to where you are now, how you got there, how long you've been in the wine business, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so I grew up in Mendocino County up Northern California, about 2 hours north of San Francisco. That's really sort of the northern edge of the North Coast wine country. And my dad's a winemaker, so I grew up around the business. He was a longtime winemaker at Bonterra, known for their organic wines, Fetzer Vineyards. So he was a winemaker there for over 30 years. So I sort of grew up around the business and got to know it from a young age. My career led me to I worked in politics for a little bit back in D.C., and then I had the opportunity to move back to California and get back to my roots and work at Wine Institute, where I've been for about 8 or 9 years now. So it's a real coming home for me to be back in this industry that I grew up in.
It sounds exciting. When you said your father was the winemaker at Fetzer for about 30 years,
mm-hmm.
I very possibly could have met him. because
yeah.
I did some visiting of the wineries and all that. And you said, obviously, it's not 30 years. It's back when he was in it. And mm-hmm. I used to live there and used to visit a lot of wineries out there. And that's when they were small and intimate, and you could meet the winemakers and owners. And
right, right.
And,
yeah, they
so
had that Valley Oak facility, and it was a really great hospitality. They had it up there. It was a fantastic place to visit. It still is.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, so I really do. I very, very sure I probably had met your father one time in the past. So,
yeah,
that's exciting. so you've been at the Wine Institute now for 9 years?
Yeah.
And go on.
Oh, and Wine Institute, we've maintained this, Discover California Wines website, and it's such a fantastic resource for anyone who's visiting California and you're trying to figure out where to go. We have a great map of all the wineries to visit, but we also have a bunch of recipes, wine pairings, so you can even select, what type of wine you have you bought at the store, and find a recipe that'll do the pairing for you, essentially. And you can find all that on the site. So it's really a great resource that we help maintain for consumers around the world to access California wine.
Yeah, it is a good source. I really do use it quite often. I read something, and I want you to confirm this, since you've been mm-hmm. there for 9 years. I read something a couple of years ago, maybe even more now, with COVID in there, it's sort of like everybody forgets that period. China, the amount of wine California is shipping to China is a staggering amount. Are they still doing that?
Yeah, I mean, California wine, our exports are pretty substantial. We did $1.23 billion in exports last year. And that's, 95% of the wine exported from the United States comes from California. So that's, almost 25 million cases of wine we're exporting. I know the market in China has ups and downs, certainly with trade issues, but it continues to be a very important market for California wine.
Yeah, I read something that they hit a plateau there. I can't remember what it was, but, the shipping to China has just been staggering, and
mm-hmm.
they're making their own wine over there too, and they're still importing, a lot from us. So.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. It's just amazing. I received an email when you first, actually it wasn't you that was being booked, but, told the vineyard acreage for California white wine grapes. I thought that was really interesting. You want to talk about that for a little bit for me?
Yeah. California has over 167,000 acres of white wine grapes planted. I mean, that's a huge, huge amount of acreage.
Just white wine.
Just white wine. And that's, California is a big state, and that's 47 of our 58 counties are growing wine. So it's white wine specifically, it's all over the map in California. So it's a important, white grapes are just as important as red grapes. And our top varieties, people think of California white wine, think of Chardonnay, and that's certainly the most grown white wine we have. But Sauvignon Blanc is really emerging as a very popular wine. People looking for that, fresh, more acidic profile, drier wine. Mm-hmm. And then Pinot Gris also is on the map as well. But, California grows over 30 different white wine grapes specifically. So you can really find anything, any grapes from around the world, you can find grown in California, stuff like Chenin Blanc, Albarino. Riesling is one of my favorite wines. And you can find really fantastic Rieslings in California. So.
Yeah, mine too. Well, I'm looking at, there it is, Riesling. I was going to say, I'm looking at this list, and I didn't see Riesling, but almost 3,000 acres of Riesling grapes are planted there. So that's substantial.
Yeah, some of my favorite California white wines are Riesling. Up in Mendocino County, there's some that are grown back in my neck of the woods, but in Central Coast as well, and some really interesting producers making some really crisp, light, not all Rieslings are sweet. some sweet Rieslings are excellent, but you can also find lots and lots of dry ones. And I find that Riesling in particular pairs so well with a wide variety of fruit food. Like, you know, if you have a dinner with, you know, making Thai food or something spicy, like even sweet Riesling will cut the spice and it will really pair well and enhance that meal. So it's one of my favorite wines to pair with just about any food, but especially if you're having, you know, a spicy dish.
And Rieslings come in so many different styles. People, I think, maybe think of Rieslings as being a sweeter wine, but there are some delicious dry Rieslings out there.
Oh, absolutely. And those, again, pair well with a wide range of foods. And, you know, on a warm summer day, you can, you know, fill three glasses with a nice, cool, crisp Riesling, and it's hard to beat.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and it's one of my favorite whites also. There are so many good whites coming out of California. Why do people immediately think reds then? What is it? Because reds has got better publicists? I mean, what's going on?
It's a great question. I mean, I think, you know, white wines, though, do have a lot of fans out there. I think, you know, we see a lot of growth, particularly in white wine, you know, Sauvignon Blanc in particular, places like Lake County, they're planting a lot of Sauvignon Blanc, and it's really, really fantastic and excellent value. You can find it at, you know, your local grocery stores and liquor stores. And it's, you know, it's, I think it's growing in popularity for sure. And, you know, I think there's maybe a stigma that, you know, white wines might not be as complex as red wines. You know, you think of those, you know, red wines you age for a long time, but really you can age white wines just as much as you can age a red wine if it's the right variety. And they can be as complex and delicious as a red wine. So, you know, I think, you know, it's, you know, we just had this National White Wine Day this weekend, and, you know, I don't really need an excuse to crack open a bottle of white wine, but it's really a great opportunity to think about these white wines and seek them out. There's so many different occasions where you can, you know, open a bottle, and especially during summer, it's, you know, the perfect time for a white wine.
Yeah, you're right. And come in the good temperature and how to get it chilled. I mean, I've heard things as little as, you know, a half hour could chill it to where you want it. I've heard 2 hours of people frowning overnight. But what is your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, if you have time and you can plan ahead, certainly, you know, you can put it in the fridge. I mean, I have a small little wine fridge where I keep about a dozen bottles, and they just stay in there, and I think they're set to 50 degrees, and they come out perfectly, you know, ready to drink. But, you know, your typical refrigerator is going to be a little cooler, so if you've left it in overnight, that's totally fine. And then, you know, take it out and leave it on the counter for 15, 20 minutes, and it should be the right temp. A lot of times people will drink their white wines too cool. And when it's too cold, it really mutes some of those really interesting and unique flavors that you can find in white wine. So if you let it warm up a little bit from that temperature straight out of the fridge, it really opens up and you get that beautiful bouquet of floral notes. And, green apple, lime, grapefruit, all those flavors you can get out of a white wine. And if you let it warm up a little bit from that refrigerator temp, I think that's the best temperature to drink a white wine at.
You mentioned something there about the floral, all that. White wines really do come out with a different set of aromas than the reds in white wines. I mean, obviously there's all sorts of different, but what is the most common aromas that you'll find in some white wines?
I think certainly if you're looking for a more drier, sort of acidic wine, something that's zesty, something like a Pinot Grigio or a Sauvignon Blanc, those are the wines that are going to have that sort of notes of lime, lemon, the citrus fruits. You can sometimes feel a little honeysuckle or even a flavor like with Sauvignon Blanc. I always think of grapefruit as the indicator that I'm drinking Sauvignon Blanc. If it's got that,
yeah,
you know, it's really what I go for. But mm-hmm. You know, if you're into something a little bigger, bolder, you want, you know, sort of the notes of vanilla or apple or something like a Chardonnay. You can get like a ripe apple flavor, and you can. Chardonnay is your grape for that, but also, you know, a grape like Chenin Blanc is, you know, less common grape, but also can have a wide range of expressions where it could be, you know, sort of that bigger, richer wine, or it could also be that, very dry wine with, you know, sort of no notes of pear and honey, but also, you know, some acidity from, you know, citrus notes.
Mm-hmm. What is the majority of the white wines grown in the northern counties, or it seemed like it's just too warm in the southern counties in California, southern part of California. I mean, once you pass Monterey, you're starting to get some very warm temperatures. Where is the, is that a wrong assumption? Is there white wine?
Yeah, well, I don't know the exact breakdown, but I do know it's, you know, white wines are grown all the way from, all the way south in Temecula and San Diego counties, all the way up to the North Coast. So, and Temecula, you can find Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay, and you can find that really grown. I mean, particularly Chardonnay is grown throughout the state. But Central Coast, I mean, Santa Barbara is an excellent place for, you know, they're known for Pinot Noir, but, you know, they go Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, and Paso Robles as well. Paso is, you know, very warm inland, but as you get closer to the coast, there's some really, really fantastic, Chardonnays that they grow in Paso. So, and then Monterey is a classic area to grow, Chardonnay.
Well, you mentioned really Chardonnays all these times. You know, for Chardonnays, I mean, but what about some of these others? I mean, we got a whole variety that is grown in California, the Muscat Blancs, the Rieslings, the Viognier, Albarino. Are those able, they're grown everywhere, or is it too warm in the southern part of the state?
There are certainly, you know, certain grapes that won't do well in really hot climates. So, yeah, I don't know if there's a ton of, say, like Albarino or you know, Blanc might not be grown in a super hot inland area, but, you know, there are other grapes that thrive there. So it's just a matter of, you know, a grape like Riesling does really well in the sort of cooler temperatures. So, you know, you would find that more on the coastal regions than inland. But whereas a grape like Viognier might do really well in a warmer region.
I can understand that. It just seems like the areas that are just so warm that you can't get any of the cool weather grapes. But like you say, Pinot Noir is, you know, really well in all those areas, and it is a cool weather grape, if you will. So,
and just because the grape does, you know, maybe its classical expression is it's from a cooler climate, but you can have a totally different wine if you grow it in a warmer climate, and, you know, it can also be excellent. It's just maybe not what people think of as that typical wine grape and how the flavors you get from it, but if you grow in a different climate, you'll get different flavors. So there's really a diversity of wines, not just diversity of varieties, but also diversity of flavors you get within a single wine.
That's a good point too. The Wine Institute, I want to talk about the Wine Institute a little bit because that's fascinating. You know, place and all that. Wine Institute was started how long ago, and what is, you know, Lindy, the little history of the Wine Institute, the California Wine Institute?
Yeah, absolutely. So Wine Institute was founded actually in 1934.
Wow.
So as some of your listeners may know, you know, Prohibition was in effect until December 1933. And when the 21st Amendment passed the next year in 1934, you know, folks that were in and around the wine business got together after the repeal of Prohibition and established Wine Institute. We were established in San Francisco. And of course, you know, the industry has roots dating back to the 1700s and existed up until Prohibition. And, you know, we had thousands of wineries before Prohibition. And then when Prohibition, a lot of them went out of business. They barely scraped by on Sacramento wine. But, you know, once wine was legalized again, they got together and formed Wine Institute. And so we're actually celebrating our 90th year in existence this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it had been around that long.
And so we're a collective of wineries across California. About 1,000 wineries participate, you know, support the work we do.
Is it a volunteer membership? Or
it is. It is.
Yeah. Because there's, you know, what, 6,000 plus wineries in California.
Yes. There are many, many wineries, and many of them are, you know, very small, but we have a huge range of wineries. But within our membership, we represent about 90% of the production of wine in California.
And so it was started in 1934. What is the general purpose of just to promote California wines around the state and around the world? Or what have they done?
Yeah, so our primary focus is public policy. So we advocate for California wine on the state, federal, and international levels. And so we, you know, bring together our members and our wineries to advocate for public policy that enhances the ability of wineries to responsibly produce, promote, and enjoy wine. And so we, you know, we're very active, you know, advocating for California wineries when, you know, there's, you know, things and you know, legal matters and legislation being passed that would impact the wine business. We advocate for a fair marketplace and you know improve the ability of wineries to do business throughout all levels in California and across the country.
Oh wow, I didn't realize that. The Wine Institute in California is comparable to other organizations like that around the country, or is
So there are other organizations and other states have their own organizations that support their you know in-state wine industries and California of course is a, you know produces 80% of the wine in the United States, so you know we do have a large representation of the domestic production certainly in California.
How many employees do you have there now?
We have about 40, 45, 50 or so employees. And they're spread across both in California and then across the country. And then we have folks in international markets as well that you know promote California wine. So we're you know promoting wines and market and export markets across the world, since that's such an important you know business for California wine.
Oh, so they're all not right there. So you've got people all over the country promoting California wines. And it doesn't seem like California wine is to be promoted all over the country.
There's you know a lot of resources behind you know wines produced around the world. So you know we're you know, we have a competitive marketplace and we promote California wine, and certainly across domestically and internationally. Huge. There's a lot of emerging markets for California wine. So we're you know, trying to grab consumers around the world, and domestically. So.
Yeah, it just, you know, California, well, like you say, California produces 95% of all exports and, are out of the United States. It would seem like everyone knows California wine and wine, and people immediately think California.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a good thing for you. I mean, for the Wine Institute, you know. So what is the, well, probably continue on as you're continuing on, the future of the Wine Institute? Is that you have any long-term plans or anything that is happening there?
Yeah, so I mean, we're always you know working to promote California wine. I mean, a lot of this is you know reminding folks that wine is you know it's you know a unique product, right? There's not really another product in the world like it. You know, it's been grown and made for thousands of years, and people are still you know consuming and making wine, and you know the parameters of how it was made for many many years. So it's a unique product. It's a product that people you know have at mealtimes. It brings people together. It's an agricultural product. Sometimes people forget, you know, your grapes come from a farm, a vineyard. It's part of agriculture. It's a part of, you know, fabric of a lot of the communities across California and across the country. And it's such a unique product and it needs to be celebrated. So, you know, we're working on you know, increasing our promotion of California wine and wine in general. And, you know, I think, you know, stuff like, you know, National White Wine Day is a great opportunity to remind folks about, you know, some of the fantastic wines we have and grown in California.
Yeah. I told people about White Wine Day coming up on the 4th, and I said, we're going to talk to California Wine Institute about White Wine Day, but we're going to be a little late on that. So
yes,
they can celebrate it.
The crap of them. crack open a bottle of white wine. So,
yeah, they can pop it open anytime. There's been a lot of talk, and in fact, I even mentioned it, I think, last week on the show, a lot of talk about how wine is not good for your health. Different studies in, well, Britain particularly, and then there's been one out of Canada, and they're starting to say that zero amount of alcohol a day is best for you. Do you have any thoughts on what's going on with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really challenging, and the United States, we have our U.S. dietary guidelines, and, they recommend, 2 glasses a day for men, 1 glass a day for women. I think the important thing is moderate consumption. Wine is not a beverage that people, you have it with a meal, you have a glass or two, it's not something that, people are bench drinking, it's important to emphasize that, wine is it's not just, an alcoholic drink. It represents so much more. It's important to have moderate consumption. A glass of wine is fine. Folks should, if they're, they don't have any other health risks, don't hesitate to, drink a glass of wine with dinner,
Right. The, moderation, like you said there, that I think is the key to any alcoholic beverages. You don't sit down after mowing the grass and down a bottle of wine. You might down a beer, but you don't. I'm hot and sweaty. Give me a sober enough block.
Right. And
drink the bottle. Not something you would do. There's been, like I say, a lot of bad publicity about alcohol and particularly wine for some reason. I don't know. They seem to be pinpointing wine. So I just wondered if you'd heard anything or.
It's certainly something we pay close attention to and reminding folks of the benefits of drinking wine. It's a unique product and it can really enhance experience. You can have a dinner party, but if you add, wine, it's an excellent pairing. It can really elevate your experience. It can elevate your meal. Would hate to, lose that. So, it's important to, promote all these positive aspects of wine.
Yeah. Instead of it's bad for you, You're right. Food and wine. I'm going to talk about that for a little bit here too. Spicy foods. What do you recommend with? You mentioned a reasoning with some spicy foods, but what other possibilities? Thai food. Indian food.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Riesling, I would emphasize, is an excellent option with spicy food, but also another variety is Muscat, which is another wine that's typically sweet. And would pair well, but also has, there are some dry muscats. That's another grape that I think can go really well with a spicier food. And you can also look towards, more acidic wines can also, sort of cut that spiciness as well. That's one of those things we should, And Gewurztraminer is another one. Yes. The sort of originally Alsatian wines. That go really well with spicier foods.
The problem with, you say, dry Riesling, dry Muscat, stuff like that, problem is they're not labeled all the time as if it's dry. Is there any other hint that someone might look at a bottle if they're looking for, say, a dry Muscat, okay, this is dry as opposed to sweet. Is there anything on it that?
A lot of times the producer will say dry Riesling or dry Gewurztraminer, but some producers on the back of the bottle have a scale and they'll put this wine as dry, semi-dry, off-dry, semi-sweet, and they'll have a scale and the dot is where this grape is. But other wines like in champagne or sparkling wines, they'll have Brut, extra dry, demi-sec. So sometimes they'll have some verbiage like that that indicates that, you know, it's also an excuse to try them and find out yourself. But for the most part, I think a lot of producers, you know, are sensitive to that and try to indicate to buyers that, you know, what level of sweetness they're getting out of this wine.
And this is something else that I question too. Do they give their ratings, dry, semi-dry, sweet, and all that, based on the bricks, the sugar content, or do they base it on, well, I want to sell a dry Riesling, so I'll label this dry?
That's a good question. I don't know the specifics there. I know a lot, you know, they certainly know what the sugar content is of the wines when they're testing. So I imagine it's often based on what the sugar content is. And you know, as you know, most wines are going to be dry, have minimal to no sugar in them. But in the case of these, you know, Rieslings and Muscats and Gewurztraminers, they sometimes will leave a little bit of residual sugar in there.
Right. You know, just some of the harshness of the acid, not for any reason. I've always, the scale is always fascinated and irritated me because, you know, I'm always thinking, well, if this winemaker wants to sell a wine that's in a certain style that's really popular now, he can just put that on the label as this is that style. And most people won't know a big difference. I mean, it's just, I don't know. There's no standard, and that's what I'm getting at. I think they should be a standard saying, okay, if it's this bricks or if it's that bricks, then it should be labeled as dry or sweet or whatever. And, that's, like I say, I've always had an issue with that, with scales when they start doing that, because you go to one winery and they'll have it peaked up a little bit sweeter, but it's not. It's the same as another winery that shows that it's a little bit drier. So I just, you know, on my soapbox here about that. But, I know we're celebrating White Wine Day, but red wines in California are what people think of when they think of California reds. I've read a lot that they're cutting back on acreage of red wines, and it did specifically say red wines. Have you heard anything about that?
Not specific to red wines. I mean, I know that there's been, you know, some talk about, you know, there being too many wine grapes planted right now, and there's an oversupply of grapes in the market.
Right.
And so I know, you know, some folks are saying, you know, to pull out grapes and all, but certainly, you know, red wine is also important to our industry in California. Cabernet Sauvignon is, you know, probably our most well-known for California wine, California Cab. But, you know, we have beautiful Pinot Noir, Merlot, Zinfandel, of course, is one of the classic California grapes as well. So another grape, you know, red grapes are grown, much like white grapes, all up and down the state.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they do get different flavor profiles by the warmer climates and the cooler climates too on those reds. I think that's more noticeable than the whites. And personally, am I mistaken on that assumption?
Yeah, I mean, I think one good example is Syrah. You know, you can have really, you know, hot, warm area, have a real, you know, bold, sort of a little higher alcohol, fuller bodied Syrah, but if you grow it in a place like, you know, Mendocino Ridge or in Santa Barbara and Santa Rita Hills, they grow some Syrah in a cooler climates, Sonoma Coast as well, and you can have a totally different expression of Syrah where it's got, you know, some herbaceousness, and it's really fantastic. That's actually one of my personal favorite reds is a cool climate Syrah, and you see a lot more of those popping up. But, you know, and I also love a big, you know, robust, warm climate Syrah as well, but you know, that shows sort of the diversity you can get from one grape, depending on where you grow it. And both expressions are fantastic. It's just what you're in the mood for.
And yeah, that's to the big, dark, inky Syrahs from the, you know, southern part of the state is really bold. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's you pair that with something that's, you know, bold on your plate too. I mean,
yeah. Like and a barbecue, ribeye or something.
Yeah, oh there you go. The Wine Institute, does it have maps of the different areas, the wine areas? I mean, if they have wine trails, I mean, different areas.
Yeah.
Does the Wine Institute promote those wine trails and have maps that people can follow? With
yeah, absolutely. So you know, California has 152 AVAs, American Viticulture Areas, or designated wine growing regions. And, of course, that's spread across almost all 58 of our counties where grapes are being grown. So on discovercaliforniawines.com, we have a map, and you can click in to a county. So if you're looking at Sonoma County, you can click in, and then you can click into the Russian River Valley and then click in further. And there's a map of all the wineries in each AVA that are members of our organization. And you can find events that are going on. So, you know, wineries are posting upcoming offers or tasting experiences, events they have coming up. We have California Wine Month coming up in September, which is a big celebration for us every year. And so wineries are really ramping up for California Wine Month coming up in September. And you can find all that information about the regions. We have explainers on each of the counties, each of the regions that are growing wine, and then popular varieties. And then you can find wineries and events that are coming up so you can plan your trip around wherever you're going in California.
Oh, sounds great. You said something that I caught my ear there, that the members, when you have wine trails, do you just list your member wineries, or do you list all the wineries that are on a certain area or in a certain area?
We list all the members of our organization that are in the area. So we do have, you know, a 1,000 members, so there's quite a few of them. It's a really great resource to find, you know, wineries across California, depending where you're going.
Yeah, I suppose if you're driving down the road and you see a wine, you're going to stop anyway, whether you have it on your list that says a member or not.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be a possibility there. The website, again, is what?
It's discovercaliforniawines.com.
Okay. So a little different. Discovercaliforniawines.com. So if anyone's interested in that, you can check on that. Mike, do you have any questions or comments for Ian?
Yeah, I was we finally got the video feed going, by the way. What are the requirements to become a part of the Institute? Like if there's a winery out there, you have 1,000 members, how do they get into that to participate?
Yeah, so you have to be a bonded winery making wine in California from California grapes, essentially the requirements. So if you're an owner or you work in a winery and you're not a member, it's as easy as emailing me. You can find my contact information on the website as well. And we have a how to join link. And this is on wineinstitute.org, which is our separate site. And you can find information on joining. It's just a simple application and you pay dues based on how much wine you're producing. So it's really a great opportunity for wineries in California to participate, you know, support all this work we're doing, and be a part of the California wine community.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, good. Thank you.
So you don't have to be a certain size? You have to have a minimum number of cases per year to apply and be a member?
No, there's no minimum limit. I mean, we have folks that are you know, very small, making just a couple hundred cases a year, so making millions of cases a year. So it's the whole range. And, you know, we have quite a few members that are small, family owned, you know, just, you know, it might just be a family operating it. And so, yeah, we run the gamut in terms of wineries that we represent.
Oh, good. So, you know, people can find small ones as well as just the biggies out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
One of the fun couple of days I had was in Paso Robles, and all the little small family-operated wineries up all around the hills there to the west of Highway 1. I mean, there's dozens of them. And it was fantastic. People, you know, you walk up in the garage and they have a board laying across something and that's your tasting bar. And,
you know, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, a place like Paso is one of the fantastic places to visit where they've got a wide range of wineries of all sizes, different types of operations, and they have different climates within their region. So, you know, if you go to discovercaliforniawines.com, you can, you know, find the wineries, sort of map out where you're going to go, and you can pop in to one or two or three on a nice day out in Paso, and you can sort of experience the variety and diversity that you can find in a region like that.
And it's great. There's some wineries that make one wine. They have,
yeah,
you know,
totally,
5 or 6 acres behind their house, and they just make one wine. And, oh, my gosh, the wines were so phenomenal. I mean, it was like you would not expect it. But these people put their heart and soul into these wines, and it comes through in the taste. It's fantastic. I love the little small wineries around Paso Robles, and this is the ones around Monterey. Same type of situation there, and it's all over California though. They do that. Check out the website. Okay, discovercaliforniawine.com is the site for all the stuff that you do. Now, wineinstitute.com is
.org.
.org is different. In what way? Why?
So we're, Discover California Wines is our sort of consumer-facing site. So it's where you go to find all the wine maps, recipes, tasting guides, and the like, and wine pairings. And then wineinstitute.org is our site that represents all of our advocacy work for the industry.
Oh.
So if you're an industry member, it's wineinstitute.org. And then for everyone else, discovercaliforniawines.com. And it's got, yeah, all that information, all the fun stuff with tastings and maps to click around and learn more about all the, you know, many, many wines that are produced in California.
Oh, okay. So people out there, californiawine.com is the site that they want to check out, because that's where all of your stuff for the consumer is. Okay. Any closing comments or thoughts for us, Ann?
Well, I really appreciate you guys having me on. It was great to chat with both of you. And, you know, I think, you know, I just wanted to, you know, thank you for giving me the chance to highlight sort of the unique and variety of white wines in particular that we grow in California. And just encourage folks to check out our site and, you know, plan your trip to California or plan your get together with friends and drink some California wine. So thank you for having me on.
You're in San Francisco, aren't you?
We're based in Sacramento now.
Sacramento now? Weren't you in San Francisco?
We were for many years, but our headquarters changed last year to Sacramento.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I used to visit you periodically when I lived out there, but that was a number of years ago, and it was always in San Francisco. And
yes,
it's Sacramento. That my eyes widened when you said that. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Well, good. New dips in that you're in now. So
that's good.
All right. Well, thank you for taking your time to visit us and sharing the information about California wines, and particularly white wines. And White Wine Day was last Sunday, August 4th. Is that standard every year, August the 4th?
I don't know. That's a great question.
You know, I've looked up. I try to find wine holidays so I can pass it on to listeners. And I'll tell you what, there are so many discrepancies.
Yes. There's a new one. So
yeah, every week there's a new one. And they say, okay, White Wine Day is August 4th. Then you find another site and it says White Wine Day is the first Saturday after the full moon in August, and you know, and stuff like this. And I go nuts trying to keep up with which ones are what. So
well, I'll use any excuse to open up a great bottle of wine. So if they tell me it's Rosé Week or if it's White Wine Day, you know, that's all.
that's why I do it. That's it's White Wine Day. Open up wine. You know.
Yes.
as if we need an excuse. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you very much for taking the time tonight. Best of luck to you. And if I'm ever in Sacramento, I will definitely stop by and visit with you.
I look forward to seeing you.
Okay. Thank you now. Good night.
Take care.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting stuff about the California lines there. Everybody knows, like I told them, everybody knows California red. You say California, you think Cabernet Sauvignon, but there are a lot of white wines there. And
it's
big variety. let's see. Boy, we got some time. And I was talking to him about health. And I mentioned last week I had found a blog, actually, that was talking about the health of wine, the bad things, all the bad things that are coming out about wine. And the blog mentioned a book, Very Good News About Wine. And it said, the authoritative health evidence, the health authorities don't tell you. And this is by Tony Edwards. And Tony Edwards is a British author, and he's been on shows, TV shows in Britain, and he's done stuff. He's written a couple other books. I got the book. Amazon, amazing. It arrived yesterday. I haven't started to read it yet, and I will and pass on stuff to everyone. From what I've glanced through, it is a very simple written book. It is not technical, and it covers all sorts of fantastic topics that correlate with the wine. He doesn't particularly talk about other alcoholic beverages or other things. Just it's geared toward wine, and he talks about heart disease, wine and diabetes, wine and dementia, sexism and racism with wine, weight, other health benefits, live longer, what's in wine, even healthier wine, alcohol-free wine, dismiss and malinformation, and then frequently asked questions. So it should be an interesting little book. It's not real thick. The paperback was, I don't know what, how much the paperback cost. My wife ordered it, and she orders stuff from Amazon all the time, and I have to guess on how much it is. But it's only 168 pages, and that includes the index and everything else. So it's a very short, simple read. Again, as I start finding out stuff through this book, I will start sharing it with you, because this thing with health and wine has gotten crazy, I believe. I mean, just absolutely insane. They talk about, for a long time, we talked about how good wine is for you and how it helps your health and how it's heart-friendly and all this. And then all of a sudden, they're coming out with things that, well, you shouldn't drink at all. There is no good benefit to drinking wine. Just stop it completely. And the study's along that line. And it is just, hopefully this book answers the question.
It's like seasonal, though. It seems to, it's a wave, or it's seasonal. It's like it's good for you, and then the next time that comes out a report, it's bad for you, and then it's good for you again. They just keep going back and forth. I think somebody's paying them off, or it could, I don't know who it would be, but they're being paid off or something to come up with these stupid reports that I don't know. Just doesn't seem too reliable because of the changes like that constantly, and.
Right.
I don't know. There's something suspicious there when they can't settle it once and for all. And okay, this is the rule from now on, because somebody's going to come up and say, no, actually, it's very good for you. Come on. Something's not right there. But we mentioned it so many times on here. It's like, oh, it's bad for you? Yeah. Oh, it's bad for you again. Must be August. It's bad for you. Got it.
Yeah, and you're so right. I never thought too much about it, but it does. It, you know, I'll report stuff that I found, and it'll be good stuff and all that. And then, you know, 6 months later, wait a minute.
Yeah.
All those reports are not right. This was right. It's all bad. You know? And you're right. It does. It comes back and forth like that. That's just amazing.
And I wonder if there's anybody out there in the general public that actually listens to it and, you know, heeds the warnings and, you know, oh no, I better, I mean, I haven't, you know, heart disease or whatever, you know, hey, I'm going to enjoy my wine. But are those reports supposed to affect the market somehow? Or is it just, you know, it's not good for you this time. So let's see what we can do, how we can drop it back a little bit. I don't know.
And that's an interesting point too, because you mentioned the market, the sales of it. I saw something where, what was it, Dry July, I think it is, or something like that. They promote it. Dry January. They said that it has affected the market a little bit. And the millennials and Gen Xers are the ones that are getting into it more than anything. And nothing against you millennials out there that are listening. I mean, you know, but the volatile market of, they're saying that it is affected by a group not buying wine or any other spirits. And it says that the Gen Xers are getting more into the energy drinks and stuff like that, and things with low or no alcohol. And I guess that's wine, but I don't know. I'm reading this book, maybe because he has a section on no and low alcohol. Maybe there's something in there too about it. So I'm looking forward to digging into that and seeing, you know, what it has to say and all, because, Nomadica from our guest last week, she is popping up on advertisements I see on Facebook and other social platforms. It's actually her. I mean, it's not a spokesperson or anything. It's actually her promoting and selling Nomadica wines. And she'll sit there and talk about it. And I am the founder, and this is good for you. And you can buy this box here and get it cheaper and get it good and all that. So, good for her. She's popping up on all that stuff and promoting the wine. But the way she talked last week, she's already all over the place. I mean, in all sorts of stores and everything else. But, I wanted to talk, well, not talk, I wanted to mention something that I saw on online. I was curious, and this is just a curiosity thing more than anything, but I saw this and I was really going, oh, wow. I don't know if we talked about it last week. We were talking about the Olympic people and winning a medal, if they get paid or if they get any compensation for it or anything. And I was curious, do they? And if it's just, you know, yay, I got myself an Olympic medal, which I would be very proud of if I got one, and I'm sure they are well deserving of it, and they should be very proud. But I looked up to see if there was any compensation. And in the United States, there is compensation. It says its payment process is deemed Operation Gold by the U.S. Olympic PC, something Olympic committee, but it states athletes will earn $37,500 for every gold medal, $2,500 for every silver, and $15,000 for each bronze.
wow, that amazed me that it was so much. And it also says that athletes who break the world record on whatever event that they're doing get a $100,000 bonus. So
no wonder they're jumping up and down and cheering.
Yeah, really. I mean, oh my gosh. I've been trying to find an answer to another question I have. Oh, by the way, the basketball game today was phenomenal. They played, who did they play? Oh, I can't remember. Slovakia, was it? But great game day. But the basketball team, okay, say they win the gold. Does each one of those persons get that? Or is it divided up? Or I would think each one would get it, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, are the girls playing volleyball? I mean, there's, 12, 10, 15 girls on the team. Do they each get this amount? I mean, it's a substantial amount. You start looking at this. No wonder people train for 4 years to go to the Olympics. I was really, really shocked at how much they get for that. And it says that what countries pay the most? China pays $768,000 for a gold. Singapore $745,000. Indonesia $300,000. Israel $271,000. Republic of Kazakhstan $250,000. Malaysia $216,000. Spain $102,000. France $87,000. South Korea $45,000, and the United States $38,000. So you get really good, you pick up the phone and say, "Say, China, I'll swim for you."
Yeah.
You get a substantial $768,000 as opposed to $38,000. But oh my gosh, all these countries are paying their athletes a tremendous amount of money.
And I heard last night, night before that, I forgot what the country was, but they give them a house, and all these, I don't know if it was it was up in Europe. I don't know if it was Great Britain or one of those like around that in Norway. I don't know what it was, but they said that if they medal, they score, the government, they basically get treated like royalty, and they get a house, they get and it's paid for. It's not like, hey, here's a house, by the way, you owe us this for this. But they really, I never understood that. I never knew that. And it's just phenomenal how they treat them after the fact. But there's a lot of work that goes into it also. All this time, I'm thinking I always thought they were volunteers and, thank you for the medal, that kind of thing. And, trip back to your country, but they actually, there's some compensation there.
There's big money compensation there. Mm-hmm. No wonder, like you said, no wonder they jump up and down the screen and yell when they win.
Right.
Yeah. I got a gold medal on my neck, but I just made $38,000.
Yeah. I did. I was watching. What was it? The long jump. I think I forgot when that. Yeah, there was. They had something about the long jump, and everything is in meters, and nothing I can figure out. I don't know how far it is, and they said she jumped. This woman jumped like, I don't know if it was 6 meters or what, and I had no idea what that was, so I converted it. It's 19 feet. So I got my tape measure out because I'm always watching the Olympics with my tape measure, and I ran down the hallway on one end, ran over to where the living room is. It was 19 feet long. I said, this woman can jump from the living room all the way down the hall in the air, not like close. And you're about to land and land 19 feet later. That's ridiculous.
That is a ridiculous distance. It really is. Well, I can look forward.
I'm thinking 6 meters. Yeah.
you know, you convert the pole vaulters and the heights that they're going up, they're vaulting, vaulting over a house. I mean, it's just
The one yesterday, I think he went 20 feet. What was that one that he, and he set a record, and I thought it was between 19 and 20 feet. And I go, oh my gosh,
yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I know. He's jumping over a house there.
Vaulting
over a house.
Let me get on the roof. Let me get on that roof and help you up. But you don't have a ladder. Who needs a ladder?
Yeah, that's okay. I can get up.
Ladders are overrated.
Hold my beer.
Give me that bamboo post. Give me that bamboo post. I'll get up there.
I'll get up. No problem.
I don't know.
Looking at this stuff. And like I say, that's the thing with America. We are the foot and inches and everything else is metric. And so they say, well, they did this, and it was this many, you know, meters or, you know, and we go, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when we start converting it, we're going, oh, my gosh.
It's pretty phenomenal what they did.
It is.
I've been doing that with everything. They say the 400-meter dash or the 400-meter run, and I'm like, okay, what's 400 meters converted over to? Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd make it off the starting line, but that's about it.
I need to take 3 meters.
Couple steps.
That's
pushing it, but yeah, I could probably go. Yeah. Break time.
Break time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my beer back.
Yep. I never really noticed. I never paid attention to it before, and for some reason, I'm like watching it, going, "Well, what have I been missing? Did the Olympics just start? Because I never knew this stuff before." And then bringing up the salaries and everything, it's just
quite
a bit going
before,
into it. So
it is. They trained for 4 years. I mean, like the four exercises, they know a lot of these people from the other teams and other countries because they travel around and do the gymnastics everywhere, and a lot of the basketball players in these other countries play in the National Basketball Association, the NBA, and these cyclists, they know each other because there's competitions, all over the place. So a lot of these people know each other, and they're constantly going to these events and everything else, and so it's not like they're meeting people for the first time.
It's pretty interesting.
It's a conclusion to All About Wine and information on the Olympics.
Okay.
Yeah, that stuff on Olympics.
I just kind of took a detour.
Yeah, it just fascinated me, though, when I started to see the amount of money that the winners actually got. I never thought about it, but then all of a sudden I thought, did they make any money? And boy, do they make money.
Yeah. And then there's endorsements. Look at the endorsements now. They're not doing that for free. There's quite a bit now.
Phelps won
commercials.
20 gold medals. I mean
20 something.
Yeah. He's got, and then his endorsements, his commercials and everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pays off for him. Yeah. So.
Oh yeah.
Oh well. Not me.
Yeah.
I'll just
it
read this book.
Afloat.
And pass on. Ah, I get it. And on that cheery note, All About all Wine. Right. We do have a guest next week. Oh, where did I put my book? Oh, there it is.
August the 15th. Yeah.
I had audio problems tonight. I'm on my cell phone. I called in like a regular guest, and I talked on the cell phone. I clarity was there and everything, but it's just irritating that it didn't work. I'm going to have to do a microphone test, pull that up to a microphone test. We've got Roslyn from Fog Crest Vineyard on next week. That'll be our guest. I'll confirm that and send you the information, Mike, so you can you can have it. But Rosman will be our guest next week on the 15th. And let's see, what do we got here? International Prosecco Day is on the 13th. And International Rosé Wine Day is on the 14th. I think. I don't know. I really don't know. I have a question mark by International Rosé Wine Day because, you know, you notice Ian chuckled because he ran across the same situation I do, obviously, not knowing what they were. So, let's see. Nothing between now and then. So we got International Prosecco Day on Tuesday and International Rosé Wine Day on Wednesday. And then Roslyn will be our guest Thursday.
All right. Very good. We'll look forward to that. And I think we are ready to close the show. It's 8.06 p.m. on this Thursday, the 8th of August. Thank you all for tuning in. Be safe. And I hope everyone was safe through Hurricane Debbie, Tropical Storm Debbie here in this area. And it turned into a hurricane before it made landfall in Florida. And everyone, hope you're making out okay.
It's still a problem, though, with the Carolinas.
Yeah.
She's not going away. Debbie's just hanging around causing flooding and everything.
Yep. Yeah, there's another one we have to watch out for that has a, I think it was a 30 or 40% chance of developing. That's out on the Atlantic right now, so we'll be watching that over the next 7 days. It has that chance.
Really?
I just saw it right before the show. I got on there and I was like, here we go. It's that time of the season. So,
yeah, it is.
Here we go. They're ramping up.
One after the other, or open to me once. You know, it's the way it works.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Have a good week. We'll talk to you all next time. Thank you. Be safe.
Yep. Thank you all for listening. See you next week. Be safe.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
And there we go. I don't know if it's going to let me in the green room. I'm going to try.
Yeah, it should be.
It should let me in there. So,